Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon, reunited as the Holy Trinity, JB.
Hello, Tim.
Shoe free, OnlyFans ready.
That's right.
And Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Who's battled the Derby Day traffic to be here.
I'm a hero. I am the real hero in this story.
That's how out of the loop I've been with anything other than World Cup rugby.
Tell you what.
That I didn't even know the derby was on today. I had no idea. And I arrived back in Manchester. I had no clue.
You're so out of the loop that I tried to talk to you about Premiership rugby and it was like having a conversation with Todd Blackadder.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to rekindling my relationship with all things Premiership, Top 14, URC and all the rest of it, but I honestly have no idea right now.
Well, it's all over. And I think before we continue, I'll start with a congratulations to you, Tim. What a World Cup. Built a YouTube channel. You've actually done what you said that you'd do. You watched all of the games, gone to World Cup final and assembled thousands of an army of followers. I'm being consistent. I think it's been a very impressive stint.
Well, on that doing what I said I'd do, do you ever like set goals, even if you don't know if you'll achieve them, so you stretch yourself so you actually aim for something?
Oh, all the time.
It's, like whether it's cutting to a certain weight or lifting a certain thing or whatever it may be.
My life is a constant failure. It is a constant failure.
Well, truth be told, when I started at the start of the year, I said I want 10,000 subscribers by the end of the Six Nations, 20,000 by the start of the World Cup. And then I basically just went,
Some more.
And sod it, 50,000 by the end of the World Cup.
But probably where you're about, isn't it?
57.
Well done.
Good work.
God, that's like an extra 10,000 in a week, isn't it?
It's not far off that.
Crikey. Well done anyway.
Yeah, no, more to the point, it's been... It's been amazing. Just it's been an awesome couple of months. Memories, and I've never been to a World Cup game before. Unlike you guys, who went out to Tokyo. Yeah. I've never been to a World Cup game before this World Cup.
And I saw Samoa Japan in '95 or something.
And didn't you go to one of the semi-finals in 2007?
I did. I went to
sorry, quarterfinals.
Oh, you were at the France New Zealand one.
That's the one.
Yeah. The Dussertoir test.
Yes.
Just a 30 tackles, whatever it was.
Was that not the final?
No, that was 2007 quarter final.
In Cardiff.
Because France was supposed to get a home about Paris quarter final, but they lost to Argentina in the opening game.
They did. Yes, they did.
You were at one of the great Rugby World Cup games.
It didn't feel great at the time, you know. like it wasn't an intense match. It was very much smash and grab. All Blacks are on top for most of the game, and then right at the end, I think Zhejiang breaks and scores, and maybe it's Alisson, I can't remember, but it definitely involved Zhejiang. One of my favourite players of all time.
And well, Dussertoir was heroic in that.
Shall we just start with Dussertoir for the World Cup final breakdown?
Well, yeah, I would just say, because it leads in nicely, is much like you now, however many years it is, 16 years on, we can talk and you can say you were at one of the most memorable Rugby World Cup games. I do feel like that's one of the things I was kind of aware of. Well, as I was watching Sia Khaleesi lift the trophy for a second time, I was thinking, oh my God, this is one of those things people are going to talk about.
It's peak rugby.
And I'm actually here. Yeah, peak rugby. Yeah. Amazing. But yeah, Dussertoir, Peter Steph de Toy, is that the parallel
word.
You're going?
That is a performance. I mean, it might not have been the best game of the World Cup, but that might be the best performance of the World Cup, though. He was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I think he was. There were some really good performances from both sides. He was head and shoulders above anyone else on that pitch.
I can't remember seeing a player play that well ever in my life.
Did he play the full 80 as well?
Yeah. Because he was still smashing people in the full 80. He actually missed a tackle that led to the turnover on 79 and a half minutes.
Like, we've always spoken about this guy as one of the best players in the world, particularly about, I'd say, 3 years ago, because he's gone through some injuries, but he was definitely one.
Well, he won World Player of the Year 2019 when they won the World Cup.
And he's sort of that guy, this World Cup, who's been sort of in the shadows, threatening to be great again.
Well, he was great in that first game against Scotland for South Africa. Yep. He was brilliant then. But like you say, he has been, by his own very, very high standard.
Yeah, 7 out of 10s, 8 out of 10s.
Exactly, yeah.
And then he just went off. So, Deuce Tuam might have got 30 odd tackles. I don't know exactly what the number was. I don't know how many Peter Steph Detoy got.
28.
But the difference was the size of the tackles.
Oh, yeah.
That was the difference.
There were so many big hits.
One on Geordie Barrett, wasn't it?
There was about eight on Geordie Barrett.
It was honestly like he was at every point in the game, he'd been told, just stand opposite Geordie Barrett and smash him. That may well have legitimately been a tactic.
And Geordie Barrett, he is a big boy, and he carries hard, but he does because he's so tall, because he's 6'5", he carries quite upright, and he presents this big target for Peter Steph Detoy, just time after time again, just nailed him.
If you want to talk about rugby values, right, and what do corporations want rugby for, and you list all the values which have nothing to do with the game, the values that embody rugby to me was that effort by Peter Steph Detoy.
Yeah.
Whatever that you can describe that is it. If your brand wants those values, you need to be sponsoring rugby today.
And I would equally say Geordie Barrett, because he got absolutely annihilated. He took like four or five of the biggest hits of the whole tournament in this game. And he got smashed and kept getting back up.
Geordie Barrett always looks like he has time on the ball. And I kind of thought after this game, maybe people are affording him time on the ball.
Not in
he had
game.
No time at all.
He had a great game. He'll reflect on the kick and feel bad about that. But
what can you do?
Yeah, you're right. There was something in the South African psyche that just was like they were not going to lose. And the attitude of Peter Steph Detoy was one thing, because it's one thing being big, quick, all the rest of it. But that was attitude, wasn't it?
The kick chase
and the attitude. The other thing that I think was like, I don't know any other team that would have done that, is stopping Rico Ioane score that try.
That's such a good point.
That is a great point.
I mean, he's one of the great players. He's one of the great players of all time, probably, Rico Ioane. When it all finishes, they'll say, that is a great centre. And at this moment in time, if you were to pick someone to finish, you'd probably pick him. And he couldn't get in the corner. You couldn't, because was it
Kurt Lierenzer?
Lierenzer, yeah.
That was some effort.
And it was a hell of a play to get him there, because Beauden Barrett, it's like a miss two. It was a Finn Russell-esque, where it was a miss two, but put him completely into the space. So Rico Ioane hit that ball at absolute full pace, gunning for the corner, and Aranci gets across. Now, I think I've got one problem with Rico Ioane, how he...
Did he have the ball in the wrong hand?
He put the ball in the wrong hand.
Yeah.
He put the ball in his right hand going for the left corner, which meant he had no chance for a fend. But even so, it was a hell of a cover tackle from Aranci.
Yeah, it's incredible that he didn't get it.
Or even ball in two hands and dive. And like
slide.
So you can reach, slide, dive, whatever. But I mean, but again, just to circle back, the absolute effort, I don't think any other team stops him from scoring. Whether it's the athletic ability, but it's the athletic ability and the attitude of South Africa.
Yes,
I love this South Africa team. I love it. So I love how the coaches take risks. Like, they're not consensus thinkers.
They took some risks as well.
Yeah. Oh my goodness! Yeah,
and I don't know if, in fact, I'll fire this over to you boys. What did you think of the team selection when you saw Pollard in the squad?
Pollard, I thought it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, 100%.
I thought the 7-1 split was obviously a risk, having 1-9 obviously a risk.
I thought the 7-1 split with Willy LaRue being the one, and not either Grant Williams, who can cover 9 and the back 3, or what I probably would have done, Marnie Libok, who can cover everywhere except 9.
Yeah, and he could probably do a job at 9 as well.
He probably could. So it was bold, but I mean, when you actually... It's easy to just go, oh yeah, South Africa have got the best players, they've got great depth. Yeah, they do. But also, they had a 38-year-old hooker who wasn't a hooker, who made his debut like 8 months ago.
They are not afraid of making big decisions and backing themselves.
100%. And
just, basically, what was he saying? Slaying sacred cows, what's the... Sacred Cow. Anyway, point is, whatever the consensus thinking is, they don't really care. They just pick what they think is best for that team.
Yeah, and much in the way as what was the guy, Billy, the Moneyball fella with the Oakland A's,
Billy Bean.
Much as the way Billy Bean sort of led the way for what everyone else will copy. You know, the next 4-year cycle, and South Africa, I'm sure that they'll be on to the next thing, but Steve Borthwick will have probably hired someone to look into battle stats.
Mm.
Andy Farrell.
Aren't battle stats just interventions, though?
Yeah, but whatever it is, but they'll be looking, they will look at South Africa and go, what have they just done? Because some of their selections don't make sense. The hooker position doesn't make sense.
It does, doesn't it? Because how many amateur armchair pundits and coaches like us say silly things like, just get a back row to cover hooker. It's not difficult. And South Africa, actually, it's not difficult, is it?
And he made 20-odd tackles.
Yeah, he was very good. Really, really good. You know, how many coaches will say, you know, the consensus thinking is, oh, we don't pick players that are past it or too old, or we're building for the next cycle. You know, would Dion Ferry even be in the squad for Wales? Or
no?
Certainly not England.
No,
certainly
not England. Definitely not England.
No, definitely not England. But here's one thing on that selection that I find, this is what I find so impressive about South Africa, and part of the reason why I think they're world champions is, if you remember a few years ago with that the Italian fox defence that the laws had to be changed for because England couldn't work it out as the game was happening. They couldn't work out what to do with it. Dion Ferry came on after a minute and a half, and straight away, without even having to make calls and stuff, the whole team suddenly, they were keeping the kicks in field. When they had line-outs, they were taking them quickly. They were doing, they were getting the line-out set really early so they could just throw it before New Zealand was set.
It's the easiest thing in the world.
It's so simple, but that's just rugby intelligence and intellect. Mm. And I don't know whether they go through all of that or whether these are just really smart rugby players that they just intuitively know to do that.
I suspect it's more of the former, as in Razzie was saying, right, if this happens,
I think it is.
And Jack as well, not to do him down.
I'll talk about amateur lineouts because this is obviously directly applicable to South Africa.
Yeah, of course it is.
But it depends how you coach lineout. So, for instance, in Talk H, we have a big emphasis on getting to the lineout quickly. So we never start a lineout static. That means that we never start lined up. You always have to run into a line out. And as soon as the line out is finished, you have to run 10 metres and then come back. And you do shuttles every time. So that just like tiny thing means you're always thinking about getting in the line quick. It would not surprise me if South Africa are always thinking we are the first to the line because it demonstrates our fitness. It demonstrates that we want it more than them. It allows us to set up quicker. It allows us to see what their formation is. And just that simple thing of running back and forth really sets that mindset. Would not surprise me one bit. And South Africa are
oddly, it was New Zealand's line out that didn't function because, again, rugby intelligence, South Africa just stacked middle and back and went, have the front all you want, knowing that New Zealand have got incredible backs. They want good ball, but they were like, no, we're not giving you good ball. We'll give you easy ball to the front. And when New Zealand did try and throw it to the middle and back,
they were all over it.
Smart. Simple and smart.
It was. It was a bit of a masterclass in that regard from South Africa. It is also worth mentioning that Pollard in the last two games, and indeed actually South Africa in the last two games, 100% kick rate. New Zealand had two shots, so they had four shots. They got two of them. They missed two of them. They get one of those two shots. Who was it? Was it Mwunga who took the conversion from the touchline, and Jordy Barrett from a long way out?
Yeah. And they turned other kicks down.
I know they turned kickable.
That's the bit I couldn't get my head around.
There was one before they scored the two tries, the disallowed one that arguably should have been allowed, and the allowed one that arguably should have been disallowed. Before that, they turned down a kickable 10 metres from to the right of the sticks, 30 metres out, but for Mwunga or Jordy Barrett, an easily kickable one, they turned it down, 3 points, which they lost the line-out, or they lost the ball, turned it over very shortly after kicking for the corner. So that's not a good return rate.
We love our high skill tens, rapid feet, footwork, incredible handling and stuff.
Do we?
World Cups. Well, no. But
right, okay, sorry.
We do.
Okay.
It's just true. Like think of the last World Cup cycle has been basically one 4-year story in England of England fans wanting Marcus Smith to have the 10 shirt and Owen Farrell to be nowhere near the England team.
Yes.
Actually, when it comes to a World Cup, it's quite handy having a 90% goal kicker and someone and someone who's quite robust. And South Africa have now won two World Cups with a guy that's a 90% goal kicker. And whether it's France, New Zealand...
The only thing I would say is it's hard to know the counterfactual, isn't it? Because they got to that final courtesy, not all of Marnie Libbock, but he's done very well.
Oh, no, he's been great.
And this was what I was going to say when I asked you about the pick. I thought this was the first time that South Africa went back to, the group think of what rugby should be, because they have gone very far with this guy, Marnie Libbock, ripping people to pieces. And I wonder if you could tell a story of South Africa being able to score a couple of tries against New Zealand rather than relying on the kick. Now, I don't know if that would happen or not, but yeah, that's one of the things I was disappointed about, that South Africa went away from what got them there. And I wondered if that roll of the dice would have backfired.
It was hammering down.
It was.
They played the conditions, just like England last week played the conditions better than South Africa. South Africa played the conditions better than New Zealand. I mean, fair play. Both teams actually tried to play and get to the edge quite a lot. I think, and I'd be interested to know what you reckon, but I think it was the selection was almost an acknowledgement from South Africa. We have had to go through the ringer just to get to the final, and this is the way that we can win. Because they were on running on fumes at the end. They were hanging on. And I think it is the consequence of... they've played the other five teams in the top six in the world.
That's how you win World Cups, isn't it? Legit champions.
Well, no, it's not normally how you...
No.
This is, I think, there's an argument to say this is the hardest World Cup win any team's ever had to put together.
Yeah, I think you're
probably right.
Yeah, I think that's undeniable, really.
And to win the three knockout games by 1 point, each game by 1 point, is remarkable.
When England won the World Cup, you would say there's maybe two teams that could challenge them. And if you look at every team that's won the World Cup since that time to maybe this year, the amount of teams that were challenging the best. I mean, when the All Blacks went against Australia 8 years ago, that Australian team was expected to lose.
Yeah.
The final was the semi-final against South Africa, wasn't it?
I don't remember it.
But that was a South Africa team that lost to Japan.
Yeah, correct.
And it was an England team that had gone out in the pool stages, and it was an aging Australia team that limped to the final. Wales were one of the best teams in the tournament. They weren't.
They went out in the semi, didn't they? That was the walk up to France and went out in the semi. So France got to the final and it was like 6-9 or something.
Yeah, anyway.
It can't have been Australia because they were in the pool with them. So
yeah,
it was. I remember watching it in Bath. So whenever we went to Bath to watch Harlequins versus Bath,
yes, I remember that.
Was it Wales South Africa in the quarters and then South Africa New Zealand in the semi?
No, it might have been. Yeah, it might have been.
Anyway, whatever happened,
it must have been.
Whatever happened, the point was, usually the winners have been the heavy favourites throughout the tournament.
So in that year, it was. The 2007 was an interesting one because the heavy favourites were New Zealand, who lost to France in the quarters. And then France lost to England, who were the massive underdogs. And then it got to the final and it was South Africa were, at that stage, heavy favourites because, well, they put 40 points on England 6 weeks earlier.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you're right. I think this is the hardest World Cup that's ever been run.
And with that bearing in mind, they've now won back to back. They're the only team though that's won back to back without a home World Cup.
Ooh.
2011 was in New Zealand. So in between World Cups they won a Lions series.
Yep.
So is this the greatest international rugby team ever?
I feel it's not. Weirdly, I don't know why. I mean, they're a very, very good team. I think some of the All Black teams of about a decade ago were probably better. But I don't know why. Because the reason I say that is because although South Africa have got the accolades and the trophies, I just feel that All Blacks team was absolutely dominant. I don't like saying that, but they were absolutely dominant. There again, maybe South Africa are not absolutely dominant because everyone else is so good. Maybe they are the best.
So I think there's two things at play. I think there is exactly the point that you just mentioned there, where because the overall standard is definitely better than it was 8 years ago. I think unquestionably there are more teams operating at a higher level than there were 8 years ago. So that, I think that's one part of it, and that plays into this South Africa team's favour. That is a card in their deck. The other thing is, I think that other teams have had more talent than this South Africa team. I think I'd actually possibly even argue that it's less talented overall than the team 4 years ago, which means that the cohesion that they've got and the teamwork, and this team is more than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, you're right.
Which is, that again is perhaps an even greater accolade to the leadership across the team, because there's not just one leader. Like, Kalisi is a great leader, but there are a lot of leaders in that team, and the coaching.
Coaching's been superb.
Yeah.
Coaching's been, maybe the coaching is the best that we've seen.
I do think they are bringing more out of that team. That team are overperforming.
Well, it's the ideas. And maybe you do need, as we called him the other day, a dickhead like Razzy, who doesn't care what anyone thinks, in order to get these results.
Yeah, disagreeable traits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe this is exactly what you need, because I'm not sure anyone else is doing that. Because they're afraid of being laughed out of town. Maybe you need the guy who doesn't care about dancing on Twitter and looking like an absolute prat. He clearly doesn't care what people think. So what does it matter if he picks a, 8-0 bench or something?
Yeah. 7-1, or only has two hookers in the squad, and one of them gets injured, and you don't replace him with a hooker.
Yeah, yeah, it's fascinating. Back to are they on fumes? I think one of the reasons for that is the makeup of their bench, because for me, when you replace a guy like, it was Etzebeth last week. I think this week Etzebeth went off slightly later, Mostock went off early. But when you have a bench like theirs, or effectively incentivizing people to play hard. You're saying you've got a 40-minute game, so you better act like you've got a 40-minute game. I think they're on fumes because the exertion that they put on the team is just so great. I don't think anyone plays like that, actually. You think about the Ireland game, the opening 40 minutes of that, I've never, ever seen intensity
It is interesting. I couldn't not watch some of the hits Eben Etzebeth was putting in that first half and not think, oh my God, he's playing like a guy that only knows he's playing 40 minutes. 50 minutes.
Yeah. Devastating when they don't take you off, though. Yeah. Like, well, hang on, wait.
Well, it wasn't quite as prescriptive as maybe the last couple. Like, Sia Khaleesi stayed on for a bit longer. Well, there was the sin bin that was part of that.
Yeah.
In fact, can we just cover off those big moments? So we got the try disallowed, the try allowed. Now I was thinking about this today. I haven't watched rugby except for the odd game where I've VPN'd the odd ITV game when I've been able to. But generally speaking, other than maybe one or two occasions, I haven't had any commentary on any rugby in the last 2 months for the whole World Cup. And it's a totally different experience.
So I generally prefer with no commentary. So I often watch without commentary anyway, except if Nick Mullins is commentating.
Yes, Nick Mullins was commentating, so I had to have it on.
I'll have to make sure I get it. But I don't know whether it's only available in stadiums, but there is an app where you can get the ref link. So if you want to do that at home, have the ref link but no comms, the wonderful Nick Mullins aside, then I love Miles Harrison as well. Anyway, doesn't
matter. Actually, the comms have been good. Yeah, in-game comms have been good. The studio stuff has been woeful at times. So two things I want to mention, actually, right?
Yeah,
so
we'll
talk about the cards.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this for a second, right? Johnny Boggs and Bruno Driscoll, get your act together. Absolute disgrace. It is the World Cup final of an institution that made you all your money, gave you your reputation, gave you everything in life, and you've not worn a suit and tie to the final. I think that is a disgrace.
And let me just say, how do you think Nick Mullins was dressed?
Suit and tie.
He had a tie on, and he was not on screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at least have a tie. So this is why...
Tom Foley was in a suit.
Yeah, fair play to him. I noticed that. That's a real... Because when you wear that suit and tie, right, what you're saying is you respect the institution, and when you decide to dress up all trendy... What you're saying is, my comfort and individuality and, my image is more important than the thing that made me. You're doing it out of respect for the thing that you are in such a privileged position for a sport that got you in the position to start with. You wear a suit and tie. That is the end of it. It's like the Premiership Final. All the BT Sports sport lot all wear a tie. And that is just a bit of respect. You want to talk about rugby values and respect? Wear a tie. George Gregan looked great. Sean Fitzpatrick looked great. Brian Habana had a tie on, I think. It's not difficult, boys. Wear a tie. So that
I agree with that.
Yeah, that's my little rant. You don't have to do it through the group stages. You might not even have to do it for the semis. But when it's the final, different kettle of fish altogether.
I wouldn't. I'd be disappointed if there was no pocket square.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quite. So that's my little rant on that. Now, cards. So I think finally we've got a classic example of the laws failing us as a sport. So if we're to believe the people that put these in place, which of course we don't because, you know, they're bureaucrats, they're not really sports people, but this Orwellian idea, we must change behaviour. When you're in the World Cup final and the two men, one from each side, who've been picked because they represent the most wholesome values of the sport, for each nation get yellow carded, they did not do that because they behave badly, because they're... You know, individuals that want to get yellow carded because they're reckless. These are the two most responsible, iconic players on either side, and they're both getting carded. One of them has a red card. They were definitely cards according to the laws of the game. No problem. The laws need to be changed. Because if those guys are getting cards, it means it's unavoidable.
I don't know. I'm not sure I agree with that. Because look at some of the hits that, say, Etzebeth or the 28 hits that Peter Steftatoy put in. They did something different. Like, yeah. you can do something different.
You can do something different, right? But when we talk about changing behaviour, when the two captains go, and it could have been... was there a third incident?
Frizzell
got Ciela, but was that for a high?
Well, no, see, that was like a rule.
Well, this is where I was going to get a bit of clarity, because we can briefly go through them, but we can get a bit of clarity, because I didn't hear any comms. So on the Frizzell, which was the first one, I assume that was for a neck roll, but apparently it was because he fell on his leg.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I didn't hear any comms. All I saw were the pictures. It was like, oh, that's a neck roll.
So it was a weird one, because I wouldn't really describe it as a neck roll. It was given for not supporting his body weight, as in... Yeah. Like, you've got to support your body weight when you go into a rut. You can't deliberately... You can't go off your feet.
It was
so is he given a yellow card because Mbenambi got injured,
yes.
Basically?
Yes. Now, this is...
I don't like that.
It was
I know,
an outcome card.
It was 100% an outcome card.
Mm.
I do have a problem with that. Because either he's targeted the lower leg, in which case it should be a red card.
Yeah.
But...
He fell on it.
Yeah, he just lost the collision and then rolled... Like, rolled over Mbenambi. Now, I think there was a little bit of an attempt at a crot roll, but he certainly wasn't, from what I saw.
I just assumed it was a crot roll.
He wasn't targeting the lower leg.
No, the explanation was something like, he's not targeted the leg, but he has fallen on the leg. So, I get the best description I can give.
In a dynamic sport where the body's being thrown over, someone falls on something,
but that
come
point,
on.
At that point, Barnsley had already given the yellow card. Therefore, the bunker has no opportunity to rescind the yellow card.
Right,
even though I think in some instances, I've said it before, they perhaps should overturn it.
The only way I can look at this is, in terms of a yellow card for a tackle... If you've not got control of your body, that's why you went high. So there's no point saying, oh, I couldn't help it. Well, then you can't help it. You don't have control. If you're falling on someone's leg and causing damage, maybe you can't. You were out of control, therefore it's reckless, and the outcome has been bad.
But had Mbenambi got bounced up and jogged on?
Fine.
Nothing would have happened. Nothing would have happened.
In the same way that if you're completely out of control in a tackle and the other guy doesn't dip suddenly and you smash into his chest, nothing happens.
Now, there was an interesting thing just on the Mbenambi injury. The fact, because I think I was messaging into a WhatsApp group just saying, after about 55 minutes, I was saying, Bongi Mbenambi is warming up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we heard, you guys heard, because I actually got from you on WhatsApp, because I wasn't listening, but I got from you, I was like, well, he's clearly injured.
Well, but, so Sam Warburton
said,
I don't know why there's not an independent doctor here for this, right? And I think Sam is... 100% wrong. It is fine to have a tactical substitution if somebody's not playing well, and if that's because of injury, fine. You can be hurt without being injured, and we definitely don't need an independent doctor to adjudicate this. So I think it's fine to take off Mbenambi because he's not as effective with his injury, but that doesn't mean he can't go back on. I mean, he could play on if he wanted.
Well, so I agree with you in principle,
yeah,
but that's not how the law is written at the moment. And this is a law I would change because this highlighted the absurdity of it. So right now, so if a player goes off because they're injured, they cannot go back on, which meant that less than 2 minutes into a World Cup final, he was not marked as an injured player. it was marked, it had to be marked, therefore, as a tactical substitution.
Yeah. Well, you which can understand that, because at the very least, you've got like, that, well, we've got an hour to try and get ready to play.
But that highlights the stupidity of it, that no one tactically takes off their only starting hooker 2 minutes into a World Cup final.
But you would, wouldn't you?
If he's struggling to play, if he had
a slight arm injury and you couldn't quite throw in right, but otherwise it was okay.
So the fact he's a front rower means, I think it's kind of like, just let it. Well, one, it was foul play that led to it, or foul play in the eyes of the law, as was given on the field. And the second thing, that he's a front rower where players can come on to replace injured players. I think it doesn't kind of matter. The interesting one would have been if it was Peter Steph De Toy.
Do you know, I think that might be the thing
Andre Pollard.
Yeah.
Well, I think this might be the thing they do, right? So the injury thing must be for front rows, because they want front rows coming on and off. They don't want to stop the game because...
Yeah, I'd love to hear if that's clarified. If the same thing had happened to Andre Pollard, would he have been allowed to have come on and taken a 79th minute kick?
Well, that's Bloodgate going back to Harlequins.
Exactly.
I think more than 10 years ago. Everyone should be a tactical substitution with the exception of concussion.
The only problem with that...
Including compound breaks. Because obviously he's clearly injured, but if he wants to stay on the field...
Well, I think Phil was just sort of nudging towards the issue with that, which is that you could get people, I've just pulled up, my knee hurts on 79 minutes when we got a penalty in kicking range.
Yeah, and you would get... It would be abused. So where it comes into the fore is not in the second minute. It's later on in the game where a player... basically needs a rest, is underperforming. So particularly if someone's come on and is underperforming and you've not got a regular substitute left, but you could bring back someone who's gone on earlier or take off someone who's already come on. And the reason this is here is to stop it being like interchanges.
Yeah.
But there must be a better way of doing it.
Nobody can come on the field, in my mind, except for blood, concussion.
Yeah.
And front rows.
Yes.
So with Pollard...
That's how it should be.
You'd have to feign a concussion.
Well, this is what I'm saying.
That's why...
Has anyone tried cutting players?
So this is why the blood capsules in Bloodgate...
Are we therefore saying that the Mbanambi situation is unique because he was a front rower and that wouldn't have been the case? The same thing wouldn't have been mapped onto another player?
No, I think the difference between for Mbanambi is not that part of the equation, but the other part of coming back on. So all Dion Free needs to say is, I've hurt my neck, and no one in their right mind is going to risk a player's neck in order to make Dion Free play on. And he can say that, and he doesn't need any clarification or any tests.
By the way, Mbanambi, he looked like he was moving quite well. So I was thinking, this could be a controversial thing, but actually South Africa didn't bring him back on. I'm really glad they didn't.
Which player, on their debut, had 5 minutes at the start and 5 minutes at the end? Started and finished.
What sort of scale of game?
International.
Can you tell which team?
England.
On debut?
Debut. Started five minutes and finished the last 5 minutes.
Is it a front rower?
No, it's not.
Hmm.
Future England captain.
George Martin?
No, sorry. He's already been in England captain.
But he was... Okay.
He's now retired.
Okay.
Okay.
Phil Vickery?
Nope.
Martin Corrie? I'm just going through them all. Martin Johnson?
Nope.
Jason Robinson?
Nope.
Johnny Wilkinson?
Nope.
Name all the captains over the last 10 years. Chris Robshaw?
Nope.
Faz?
Nope.
Big Courts?
Nope. Amazing on second. Genge? No, amazing what a second rows have captained the team though.
Hmm.
Any more?
Are the second rows for England that have captained the country? Who are the second rows?
You said Johnson, you said Corrie.
Marrow has captained England once, has he?
Not him.
I don't think he has.
I don't think it's captain material either.
Hmm.
Oh, that's another thing we need to talk about.
Don't know. We'll give up.
Steve Borthwick.
Oh, really?
Yeah. See, Borthwick came on, got a blood injury, and it's before they change the laws, you've got to be stitched up in 10 minutes. And bought him off for the whole thing, basically, and brought him back on for the last five.
So he's having, surgery for the best part of an hour.
I've got no idea. Maybe his replacement came on was great. I can't remember why they kept him off, but they did. Just on Mario, did you hear the press conference this week for the England team?
Not one with Mario.
God, it was painful. So, this online abuse narrative, which just never shuts up, right? They all sat there in the press conference, and Mario's like, we're just so proud of Tom, how he's dealt with it with courage, and he's gone through all the right channels. I was like, grow up. He was called a name. Right, he's a big boy.
No, I don't think he was referring to the name. He was referring to the
online abuse.
The online abuse.
Just turn it off.
Well, yeah.
I mean, look, I've been...
But I actually think, for what it's worth, that's exactly what Tom Curry would have done. I don't think it would have... Stuff directed at him would have phased him.
But it's his catastrophization, isn't it?
I think where it would affect Tom Curry, I'm just thinking, he would just go, yeah, whatever. I honestly think he wouldn't care. He's an impressive bloke.
Mm.
But I think if his mum got upset, that would start to bother him. Mum was getting worried on his behalf.
I think you've got a point there, which is like, it's always friends and family that get more upset.
Yeah.
But they get upset with what's in the paper. They get upset with what's been said on TV. They get upset with substitutions. They get upset with fans in the crowd. They get upset. I mean, I'm sure that if the Farrells weren't such a rugby-focused family, and... You know, particularly Farrell Senior, he's been on the end of a lot. You know, you want to talk about real abuse? You try playing Wigan St Helens on bloody Good Friday.
Andy Farrell spoke up just before the World Cup in a press conference and said
he did actually,
and spoke up and just said the way Owen's being treated by people. I just think it's disgraceful.
If you think about, I'll just go back to rugby league actually, like the atmosphere, like the. Sort of the visceral hatred between those teams and the tribalism. I mean, that is real, actual anger directed towards players. And the problem with social media is you make up half it in your head. Like, you just do. So for the England team to sit there and just start talking about courage is not social media. Courage is playing rugby. I just hate this. They're always making it out to be worse than it actually is. I read a post on another social media site, LinkedIn of all things, talking about referees, and this is on like the Rugby Union page or whatnot, talking about how the pressure and the abuse, we all need to be kinder. It's like this industry where we manufacture problems so someone else can sell you the solution for them. Rugby is rife with it. It was a name, right? Some people got upset. We can all move on though.
Well, let's draw a line under that point by just saying that I think World Rugby, again, haven't dealt with that well at all. And
transparency. Lack of transparency.
Lack of transparency.
Well, I just hope that they're all dealt with like this, because the way that World Rugby dealt with this incident is like, basically how I'd like them to deal with all incidents like this. Just, okay, something happened, we can't prove it, let's all move on. Now, okay. If that's a consistent standard, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
It's when there'll be... I mean, this won't be the consistent standard. If it was said by a different player, then I think there'd be a proper witch hunt.
I don't actually disagree that... It would have been nice to get a bit more transparency as to actually what they'd investigated and what they'd found.
That's all they'd need to say.
But in the run-up to a World Cup final, I always... My expectation was nothing would happen. Therefore, they just fulfilled my expectation, and
good.
We move on.
Imagine if he couldn't. I mean, actually, as it happened, he didn't play much.
He did. Yeah, right. Yeah. It was immaterial.
For my money, one of the best players in the tournament. I could not care less.
We said this last time. Let's talk about these decisions. We've dealt with one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first one, the Frizzell one.
Yeah.
Very sad to see Bongi go off after 2 minutes.
Oh yeah.
But it was.
Outcome-based decision, I think.
Yeah, I think that is right. Because you've got to support your body weight. You can't collapse on a ruck. But collapsing a ruck isn't a red card offence. Like, it's just an unfortunate rugby incident when injury happens. So it was, to me, read as outcome-based.
And before we go on, I just want to preface this whole conversation by just saying I thought Wayne Barnes was excellent. Mm. I didn't hear... The TMO interaction, but what I have heard from people is that we've turned the dial all kinds of wrong on the power of the TMO has, and he was in Wayne Barnes' ear too much. That's what some people have said.
Yeah, let's get onto that in a minute. Yeah, let's go through them sequentially.
But what I was going to say is my perspective was Wayne Barnes was really good, and any suggestion that any refereeing decision was the cause of one team winning or not is complete bollocks. So let's just say that. But have a discussion about the decision. So what's next?
So next one sequentially was Sam Keane, which is a red card. Like application of the laws as apply them consistently. It's direct contact with the head, with force and no mitigating circumstances. Therefore, it's a red card. And it's been consistent broadly for that kind of stuff throughout the tournament. There's been a couple of like awkward head clashes where it's not, but I think it was the right call. I don't think it changed the trajectory of the game. Mm. The minute that it was upgraded to a red card, that was the minute that South Africa scored their last points of the game. Because Pollard, on 34 minutes, 7 minutes after Sam Kane went off, he slotted the fourth and final South Africa penalty. So in with a man down for... Sam Kane off for 50 minutes plus 50
minutes.
So they
played half an hour with a man fewer.
Yeah. New Zealand scored 8 to South Africa's... 3 in
played,
that period
they,
of time.
They played better as well.
They did actually play. Now, South Africa also had two men in the bin during that period. But, yeah, it didn't... I don't think that changed. If anything, it gave New Zealand the kick up the arse to...
Well, New Zealand and South Africa are similar in one respect, which is their captains probably don't deserve to be in the back row. I mean, I really think...
I don't agree with that.
So, do you... I think
well, who would you pick instead for...
Frank Smith.
No, who would you pick instead for New Zealand?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't really know his answer. I just don't feel that Sam Kane is the best back rower in New Zealand.
No, he's not. Ardy Savia is, but...
Ardy's a great captain. I mean, he really is a great captain.
Ardy may move across to 7 in the next couple of years.
The answer is...
Back to 7. He can play.
I mean, the honest answer to this question is I don't know enough about New Zealand back rowers to say it's got to be that guy, or that guy. I do know they have an awful lot of them and they're not hard to find. Yeah. And Sam Kane doesn't impress me enough on a regular basis.
Yeah, well,
I thought these
two games...
He's been
really
games,
good this year.
Yeah,
he's been actually in the last...
Rugby Championship, and again, that Ireland performance was a career-defining moment for him. It's such a shame...
Do you not think the red card in a World Cup final might be career-defining?
Unfortunately, so, which is really harsh on him, because I can't help but feel sorry for, well, any player that was in that situation, because you talk about, changing behaviour, the margins are so small, and he's...
It is so small.
He wasn't reckless. He wasn't careless. He just got slightly wrong.
Yeah.
And
I would say he was reckless by the definition.
Yeah,
I think these should be limited to yellow cards from now on. Well, the yellow card I can get on board.
At the very least, I genuinely think, looking at this, there's an argument for not having a man down. Like maybe the player, you're out the game, but you keep it at 15-15.
So did you...
Yeah, excuse me.
So I referenced an interview with John Dobson on Science of Sport podcast, Ross Tucker, a couple of weeks ago. He mentioned this. He said he was at one of the... you know the conferences where, JB, you hate it?
Yes.
World Rugby gets all of the... Or they get a select choice of players, coaches, referees, everyone else, to discuss law changes, what's... goes well, what
why,
goes badly.
Why weren't we invited to that?
We've
had some great ideas.
Not yet, but maybe one day.
Yeah.
But do you know what? So John Dobson, coach of the Stormers, said in one of these that he attended, where Jacques Nienaber and Joe Schmidt and others, including international captains, were there, do you know the reason why coaches in particular, I think, and players, didn't want to remove red cards as a you are gone? You are out.
No, go on.
So they want to benefit from it.
Oh, wow.
So they don't...
What?
They don't see themselves...
getting red cards.
Yeah.
I love
it.
It's optimism bias.
Yeah.
It was an absolutely fascinating moment for me, because but like in South Africa's instance, where Jacques Nienaber has been spoken about before, Jacques Nienaber, biomechanics is something he's very good at as a former physio. And obviously rugby player and high-level coach. And he's coached some of the biggest men in the world to tackle low generally. They are one of the general beneficiaries of yellow cards and red cards.
Yeah, they are. That's
so
great.
These guys don't actually want to get rid of the red card because they think they're going to be the ones to benefit
from
it.
This works so well for them because they are so physical, teams have got to start taking risks to stop them. That's when you get careless. That's when you... sometimes switch off from your systems and whatnot, or your technique goes. It's absolutely right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely right. It's, I mean, it's not great for everyone else, but it is right.
Well, everyone's got a model, though. Like, if you're looking, like, if I bet you could pick, probably between Etzebeth and Peter Steph de Toy, you could probably pick 40 examples to just show your players. Get the drill. This is how you. Right, the Etzebeth hit on Richie Moonga.
Oh, wow.
Richie Moonga's about 9 or 10 inches shorter than Etzebeth. Absolutely nails him, like, round the midriff through fantastic technique. Like, it can be done. Mm. It's the rest of the world have to catch up with South Africa.
I mean, just because you're not getting a concussion doesn't mean Etzebeth's not shortening your life by a few years.
Oh, no. I'm not making that argument. I'm saying these guys are playing within the laws.
Yeah. I know you're not. But, so, like, it's... It's one of those things, oh, look, South Africa, don't hit high. You'll be safe.
I would hate to be Jordy Barrett body today.
So we're feeling sorry for Sam Kane. We would perhaps even look at alternatives to losing, going a man down, but fine. It was the right decision.
It's consistent with the way the laws are written and applied.
So next then we go to Khaleesi.
Khaleesi.
Who, by the way, should have put the game to bed. When he made that.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Oh, when was that break? Start of the second half.
Four or five minutes into the second half. Ooh. He really should have put that. Like, he's got a man either side of him. Anyway.
Jordy Barrett defended that really well, to be fair. Made him think.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But there was a few... there was one late on down the left wing with, I think it was Peter Steph de Toy breaking down the left wing. The scramble defence of New Zealand was excellent.
There was another one where down that same touchline in the second half, Cody Taylor made a break.
Yeah.
And New Zealand, from where I was sat, the numbers New Zealand had, I don't know if you've got it on the TV, South Africa were spent had New Zealand just wanged it left.
Really?
They had so many numbers.
I don't think we got that viewpoint.
And they didn't. They crushed it up. Anyway.
Khaleesi, I think it's probably the right call.
Yeah, I think it's...
This is one of those ones where I wasn't listening to commentary, didn't see all the slow motion replays and stuff, but it looked to me like he made contact with the ball.
Yeah, secondary.
Like Owen Farrell did on Andre Esterhazen all those years ago.
Oh, yeah, identical. Not even a penalty. Shouldn't it even been a penalty?
If that's your threshold. The difference was that Khaleesi's head then made contact with, was it Ardie Sveer's head?
But the mitigation was that was as a consequence of the contact with the ball.
Yes. Second order effect.
Which is kind of fair.
Yeah, I thought we got it wrong. Now, the more interesting one is the knock-on.
Yeah, well, we got both tries and we've still got the final yellow card. So let's go for the first.
What was the final yellow card? Do you remember that?
It was
Colby.
Oh, right, yeah.
Deliberate knockdown.
Yeah. Very similar to, again, not trying to just bring Owen Farrell up again, but very similar to Owen Farrell at the end of Fiji.
You have to talk about the Colby one because the Colby one seems like...
At the end of Farrell, at the end of Fiji game, Farrell did something similar and it was a penalty, not a yellow card.
It's not all about Farrell.
I'm just saying, like...
I mean, if you've got a Sam Burgess reference,
I'm just saying people talk about consistency and stuff. I didn't have a problem with the yellow card, but it was very similar to that one, which was not given a yellow card, but just the torture that Colby went through as a result on the touchline was... I don't know whether you saw it on the TV, but what I noticed is I watched Khaleesi because I was just like, I want to soak this guy up. And he ran straight to Colby to go and give him a hug. Oh. But it was just the awareness, like, talk about leadership, the awareness of him to recognise and see, oh my, that guy is in bits on the touchline. I just thought it was good. Good. Like,
yeah,
it was nice. I liked it.
Yeah, he is one of the best off-field leaders I think I've seen in rugby. I'm not sure he's the best on-field leader.
Well, on-field, like, if you were criticising Owen Farrell, taking it back to Owen Farrell, last week for the way he spoke to a ref, like, Khaleesi is diametrically opposed, the opposite end of the spectrum.
I don't mean, like, the way he talks to refs. He's the perfect guy for that.
Yeah.
He's got such gravitas now, like, such respect.
He just means his merit as a rugby player.
And just as a rugby player. Like, he, you know, would you say he had one of the great games?
I thought he put some amazing hits in.
Did you?
Yeah.
Which one stands up?
He got a couple on Talia. He got one early doors on Moonga, where he bolts out of the line. He's a lone man bolting out of the line, and he goes low on Moonga. And if he misses that tackle, Moonga's stepped him, and there's a dogleg in the defence.
So I didn't see all these.
Now he messed up the break.
He messed up the break. Start of the second half. I don't blame him for that, because that's not really. I mean, it is his job. It's not really his job.
He does like loose balls and stuff. He's amazing at being the one that manages to get loose balls and stuff. So yeah. Anyway, I think he's great.
Maybe he just does a different job to the very eye catching. Yeah. Biggest effort toy and everybody else who just absolutely batters people.
I think that you've just described that South African team. If you don't see much of a player, it's because their role is to do unseen things.
Yeah, maybe when you've got the other seven barbarians destroying people, you do need someone a bit calmer to chat to the ref. I don't know. I mean, for me, I know I've mentioned his name over and over, but Nambi, I mean, to me, is the captain for that side.
They've got leaders everywhere.
They do.
But that is also undeniably true.
Vimal and Anetsabeth are...
PSDT.
Yeah. And
two of the best props in the world, just in case. Just throws on.
Colby's a character. I mean, when you actually look
at Pollard.
Pollard. When you actually look across the team, there are many of them have won two World Cups now. Some of them might be around to try and go for a third. But
there'll be a few.
You look across that team, and this is what I mean about. I think Phil's right when he says they're greater than the sum of their parts. Yet, equally, when you look at them, there are some players that you kind of go. They're iconic. Faf de Klerk's going to be an iconic scrum half.
Etzebeth.
Andre Pollard. Yep. Eben Etzebeth. Peter Steph de Toy. These are kind of iconic rugby figures. Yeah. Cheslin Colby.
Just on Faf, obviously he's a great player. Do you think he's going to be iconic? Because he just gets himself in such ridiculous situations. Like, do you remember, like, there was a meme of him slapping that player's arse as he's trying to get the ball out? Like, he's not as good as Aaron Smith.
Smith was brilliant.
Yeah, he's not even comparable to Aaron. No one really is comparable to Aaron Smith, actually. But he'll be remembered because he's all action. He's a bit weird, like the way he looks and the way he's erratic. But when he does the occasional brilliant thing, the occasional mad thing.
He's brilliant. He made about 15 tackles himself.
Yeah, he's just so unusual.
Yeah.
Iconic's right, isn't it? It's not saying he's the best in the world. He is iconic.
Yeah,
he is.
Like, he isn't Aaron Smith by any stretch.
The moment for the game that summed Faf up for me was his off the ball hit on Mark Talia, which he got penalised for, and then as Barnsley was penalising him, which was Tom Foley, Barnes asked Tom Foley, did someone take someone off the ball there? And Tom Foley said, yes, it was Faf de Klerk. So Wayne Barnes penalty. Faf then runs up to Carl Dixon, who was the touch judge on that side, and like sarcastically applauds him.
To which
I would have marched him back another 10 metres.
Yeah, definitely.
It was such a stupid off the ball hit.
How many highlights are there of Faf getting into altercations with massive men?
Yeah. He's nuts.
He is nuts. You've got to love him for it.
Yes. So we're now at the disallowed try, the first one.
Yeah.
So
I'm interested in this because I didn't hear all the commentary and this went back some phases and talk to me.
So it was clearly a knock on at the back of it. It was a line out.
But it was called to play on.
Barnsley saw it and said, not a knock on. Not a knock on, play on. So I've now watched this twice. Like, I've watched the game twice and I've watched this twice and counted the phases. There are four rooks. New Zealand then scoring the corner, great pace by Richie Moonga.
Yeah.
Lovely inside ball with Talia on the outside and
Smith.
Aaron Smith on the inside. Great finish. It's Dialandi he goes around and beats for pace.
Yeah.
And then gives just the hint to Valemsa to go for Talia to give him the time to pass the ball back. A lovely finish. But Tom Foley then pipes up as the kick's being taken, saying, Barnes, we need to look at this. Which is like Moonga was set up to take the kick, so it wasn't immediate, but it was before the kick is taken. But the key here is you can only go back, I think it's three phases, unless there is foul play.
Yeah.
And this was not foul play. It was, now it's...
So is that a stupid law? Is that another example?
No, I think it's a good law.
No, because it's, otherwise you could go back 15 phases and it's like immaterial to the try.
Yeah.
Like if it's missed in real time, and in this, it wasn't missed in real time.
It was referenced.
It was,
yeah, he said play on, he's gone backwards.
He referenced it several times. Barney said, not a knock on, not a knock on, play on, because the South Africans were calling for it. So it's overreach by the TMO. As in, it is explicitly outside the...
And it's at the point the TMO brings it up, it's really hard for Wayne Barnes then to go, I saw it, and I may have got it wrong, but I saw it, and that's not within the law.
But that's the honest thing to do. Well, I don't know.
Well, so, once the TMO's raised it, that's how it has to stand.
And a Barnes, you can't then say, oh, were there three phases or four phases? Because the TMO should know his jurisdiction.
You should definitely ask that.
Yeah, but hold on.
He's got so many things.
Imagine if that happened and they went, yes, it was definitely a knock-on and I missed it, but it's one phase too many, so we can't give. So we have to give the try. No, but that would have made rugby look ridiculous.
And you can't also, imagine if the referee, every time the TMO pipes up, says, can you just tell me how many phases that? I want you to play it back and count the phases.
Am I the only one that feels really comfortable with that solution? I think that's a great solution.
Yeah, it just slows everything down.
You're a rugby fan. Can you imagine?
I used to be, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just imagine you're one of the millions of people who doesn't really watch rugby but said, I'll tune in for the World Cup final, and that is what you saw. I would go, what?
Or the ref every time the TMO is called. Excuse me. Can you count the phases, please?
Well, yeah, Tom Foley shouldn't have called it.
Yeah.
And there needs to be clarification. Look, it's gone three phases. You can't do it. Now, the other question is, should he just be calling that anyway? And I think he should be, actually. So... if he's going to be involved, if the TMO is going to be involved, help spotting things, he should call that knock on immediately. And if he doesn't, neither of them have the right to go back more than three phases.
I don't want the TMO to be calling knock ons when the ref sees
Tom
it.
Tom Foley said something else to Wayne Barnes, and Wayne Barnes ignored him later on in the game. I can't remember what it was for. It might have been for it. It was something fairly important. But he says something like,
I've seen it, yeah.
There's knock on there, and Wayne Barnes is like,
no, I've seen it play on. Yeah, I can't remember what it was, though.
Yeah, so he has done that in the past.
But then I thought Barnsley handled... when he gets pointed to that, to say it's
to.
A knock-on...
Barnsley
has to deal with it.
It's interesting.
But then Wayne Barnes says, yes, but he identifies that Etzebeth tackles... was it Scott Barrett? Played him in the air.
Which is nonsense. Wasn't it, to get himself off the hook?
Now... it's a funny one because...
well, that's quick thinking, that.
Yeah. I thought Barnsley handled it very well. Now, if there wasn't a knock-on, so that contact in the air by Etzebeth on, let's say, Retallick, that happens pretty much every single line-out because Retallick was millimetres from the ground and it's barely... but it was, by the letter of the law... it was a penalty against South Africa.
So again, we cannot fill the gaps in here, and Wayne Barnes will probably never admit it until maybe he's after he's retired. But what happened there then is Wayne Barnes managed to calculate all of this in his head. Oh dear, Tom Foley, what have you done? This is all going on in Wayne Barnes' head. What have you done? I saw that at the time, but now you've brought it up. I have to reference it. Oh, it's more than three phases. Oh shit.
Yeah, exactly. How do I tip the scales?
I can give them a pen and maybe 3 points to... I mean, that's smart from Wayne
Barnes.
That's
exactly what he did.
Yeah,
now,
it is.
And I don't think it's an accident either, because if you talk to a referee about the game... so, you know, no secret, we are friends... JP Doyle is a friend of the pod. Mm-hmm. If you listen to him talk about rugby and the games, he just knows... these guys are so good at what they do. They know every law inside out. And yeah, they get the occasional... decision wrong, but you tried doing this. That wasn't an accident. He would have known that it's gone over three phases. Does he want to have the argument with the TMO? Probably not. I think he tipped the scales using a technicality, because that's never a penalty in normal life.
But equally, you're never watching that in slow motion in real life.
Yeah.
So Technically, it was a penalty.
That's his.
But yeah, like I thought Barnsley did very.
He's a man of the law. He's like a barrister.
That
was just using those skills to the max.
Well,
yeah.
it also proves a point to me that
having justice seen to be done, but no one too unhappy.
It also proves to me if you want a good World Cup final, you can't have England playing in it.
Yeah. I tend to agree because the best referees are English.
They are hands down.
Tom Foley.
Slight overreach, but it was like he has seen something that Barnsley clearly got wrong,
and you've got to imagine what's in his head. He's got like, I've seen this, it's a World Cup final and a try and, has resulted from it,
and he is really thinking, I do not want a 62 minute Razzy Erasmus video calling out all of my failings.
Did you listen to our podcast last week after you left him?
Yeah,
we went into detail about this. It does make a difference. It definitely makes a difference.
It definitely makes a difference.
How's Razzy got his camera phone out? You missed a knock on, Barnsley.
Right, and then we've got the try that was given. You see, my gut feeling when I saw this and when I saw the replay on the big screen, sorry, I only saw the one replay on the big screen, was the ball travelled flat or backwards and then bounced forward, which is not a knock on.
Yes, and I think that is right. I think this was a try. I think this
is the sort of one that low-level referees on a second team on a Saturday or a mini rugby game on a Sunday will give us a knock-on.
Well, and lots of other referees.
Yeah,
as well.
I would give it as a knock-on, right? But I'm also happy to trust Wayne Barnes on this. That's how I look at it.
Because I do think exactly as you described, Tim. I think Talia, he offloads it and his hands go. I'm not going to say backwards, I'm going to say flat, and the ball travels out of his hands flat, and you're right on the, I can't remember if it was the 22 or the 5-metre line, but you're right on one of the lines, but then it bounces and bounces, it definitely bounces forwards.
Can I tell you about a try that we scored on the weekend for Tok H?
One of many, I assume.
Well, I did get a try, actually. But another, an assist from me.
Nice.
So, we are playing in the Aspel, like, just beyond their 5-metre. They're about to exit with a box kick. I've made a tackle and I've hurt my knee. Not badly. Hurt, not injured. And I'm
tactical substitution.
Yeah, and I'm on the floor and I'm just waiting for I'm waiting for them to kick the ball so I can get up and then rejoin the game. But I'm on the Aspel side. I can't join the game because I'm actually offside. If I touch an Aspel player or something, I'm offside. We charge it down, right? And it bounces straight into me. The referee just says, play on. We collect, score, did you, score the try.
Did you collect or did it bounce? No, it bounced off it, you, ricocheted
it,
off you.
It hit me into one of our players' hands and the referee was like, oh, right. And I was looking at the ref, I was like, am I honest enough to say that it's not, sir, you can't give that try. You can't.
But as long as you don't play the ball, I think you're okay.
Do you reckon?
As long as you don't play the ball or
you're allowed to
like,
be out of, you're allowed to be out of the get offside but out of the game. I don't know if you are instantly offside if the ball hits you. Anyway, it's one of those where you can
good referee actually. Yeah. But I'm sure he got that wrong. I felt sorry for Aspel. I really did.
The second one I think that the allowed try probably was a try. On balance. Then we've got the Colby incident which we've already talked about. And then I do just want to touch on the final turnover, which was Quagga Smith.
Is this where Colby's tackling and...
It's not Colby. It's where Peter Steph-Tatoy actually misses a tackle. It's Rico Ioane. Ball comes back. New Zealand had done about 10 or 12 phases.
Oh, yeah, hands down, just like France.
And it was actually... It's worse than that. So there are stills showing Quagga Smith hands on the floor and, like, he's clearly not supporting his body weight with anything other than his arms.
I think the France one, you could actually go... Yeah, maybe he was supporting his body weight and it wasn't material, but this one was material.
It's like full palms of hands down in front of the ball from his side, behind the ball from Rico Ioane's side. But he also comes in from the side.
Brilliant.
He's in front. So Rico Ioane hits the deck and Quagga Smith is closer to New Zealand's post than his own post. And he comes directly across, hands on the floor, and then kind of scoops it up and... Barnsley points it to his foot to say hit by a foot or something like that. I feel like that was, if you're going to moan about anything from Wayne Barnes, that would be the one.
Yeah,
and that is Quagga Smith. Is that he does things that quickly. It's hard to spot. He's so explosive.
It was a fraction of a second.
I mean, yeah. but that's another player, right? Because look how incredible. Every time he comes on, he has massive impact, and he is amazing.
He was a jobbing sevens player. Well, he was until about when would it change for him? Maybe he's been around for about eight years.
So you know, it was when the Lions were good in 2017.
Do you know how long ago that was? It was when Janse van Rensburg was good. And that was years ago.
I want to say 2017. It was when Pfaff got demoted to second choice in Herschel Janssens.
Now, do you remember... Oh, yeah. Do you remember this boy? Is it Kronbrink?
The winger.
Yeah, big, whatever happened to him? He was ace. Winger.
Yeah, yeah.
Kronbrink, and who was the who replaced Pfaff? It was. It'll come back to me in a second.
Yeah, another blonde, small blonde.
Oh, wait, no, because he came to Sale as well.
No, he didn't. You're thinking of Curtly Ambrose. No, that's the cricket player. Ambrose.
Curtly Ambrose. Papier.
But not him, because he played at the Stormers.
Oh, yeah.
The guy was. It'll come back to me in a second.
So, yeah, Ruan Kronbrink.
He was the Punisher.
He was a unit.
Yeah, he's not actually... I mean, he's 100 kg and 6 foot.
He's still called the Punisher.
Utility back.
Where's he now?
No club, so he's played for the last few years. He played went to Stade Francais for a couple of years.
Speaking of Stade Francais, my boys, Bayonne beat Stade Francais. Stade Francais' first defeat of the season to the mighty Bayonne.
So, a friend of the pod, a listener... who I rely on for information, I won't say no more than that, is friends with the owner of Biarritz. And you picked the wrong team, Tim, because if you'd have just picked the team a few miles down the road...
I'm still up for grabs. Yeah. No, what we could be in.
We could be there.
But the Biarritz v Bayonne derby is meant to be spicy.
Oh, I bet it is.
Ross Cronje.
Ross Cronje, that's the one.
Was the scrum off?
Yep. And Elton Yanchis was fly half.
Yep.
Who is it? They had.
I love that we go down niche little rabbit holes like this. I love it. But yeah, it's our World Cup.
it was a great World Cup
final review, and we're trying to fill in the gaps of all the team of the 2017 Lions side.
Final. The Super Rugby finalists who never actually won it.
Yeah, they lost 25-17 to the Crusaders.
They lost twice in a row, did they not?
Yeah, I think they might have done. Speaking of niche. You've just mentioned French rugby, Tim.
Yeah.
Niche. Players from club teams and going French rugby. Did you see who was starting fly half for Toulouse today? Tonight, they kick off in 10 minutes' time.
This is a good one.
Toulouse.
Is it an indigenous British player?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so who would that be? It's going to be someone like... I'll tell you who it might be. It'll be someone like... the guy Seba, Wasps and Saracens guy.
Billy Searle.
Oh, that's a good one.
Billy Searle.
Is it Billy Searle?
Billy Searle is starting for Toulouse this week.
Yeah,
you were going to say Ali Crossdale.
Yeah, Ali Crossdale.
Somewhere else. Where is he playing?
He might be in France, actually.
He is in France.
Ali Crossdale. Sure
Billy Searle. Billy Searle
is starting for Toulouse.
Imagine the odds you would get on that when he was... hang on, is Billy Searle the one who played at Worcester?
Yes.
Wasps. He played Wasps. Christ almighty.
Ali Crossdale's at Perpignan.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of guys which are going to be popping up in France, I think. Where's Will Hayden Wood?
Rugby World Cup final.
Did he go to Exeter? Or am I just making that up?
Maybe.
Rugby World Cup final. No, it's fine. I love it. I actually genuinely love it. So I think that's wrapped up the all the big decisions and the big moments. Bottom line is the best team won. Well, no. South Africa deserved to win.
Yes,
because New Zealand, if they were the better performing team on the night, didn't take the chances. They didn't choose to kick at goal. World Cup final. How many World Cup finals do you have to have? Where one thing I couldn't believe is the good positions New Zealand engineered themselves, and with all the kicking ability they've got in their back line, they never sat someone in the pocket.
No, South Africa sat too many people in the pocket. Well, four attempts at drop goals.
Looking at that, and I love the drop goal as a tactic, because just the threat of it makes the defence just change completely, yeah. And that opens up space.
Let's
elsewhere.
Just talk
I love
about
it
a second, because kicking does make the defence change substantially, doesn't it? Because you have to drop players back. Does the drop? What does the drop?
Drop goal. You're charging
more
it.
Speed. I
yeah,
guess.
You're charging it. So there might be little holes for a dink kick or something like that.
Yeah. So it's a threat, I guess. Between, I mean, setting up for a drop goal and then chipping it would be a
yeah.
little thing.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Or if you've got someone, because you're going to have, say, three or four players, all pincering, defenders, all pincering in on a single focal point. So there has to be space elsewhere. If you can go kind of out the back to a winger or a fullback putting pace on the ball.
Yeah, this is the next great innovation, the dummy drop goal.
Yeah. Well, is that what Danny Kerr did on Friday night? He did some kind of drop goal. I don't know what that was.
Oh, actually, that's a good point. Do you want to talk... okay, so two more things I want to talk about for the World Cup. I think... Do you want to talk about England or not? Not really. Or maybe a little bit? 5 minutes at the end.
We can touch on it.
Yeah, maybe just talk
just
about
like,
the forward pass. But
not to pick a World 15 from the World Cup. But maybe, if you're going to pick a World 15, rather than go position by position, just give me your candidates right away, off the top of your head, who would make the team.
Peter Stevens-Toy.
Yep.
I think you have to have Ardie Sveer. He's just been huge.
Ardie has been great.
Bundyaki.
Yeah.
And I might there haven't been standout centres aside from Bundyaki and Jordy Barrett. So I might try and engineer them both in a.
Yeah, they could do that.
Yeah.
Backline together.
Jordy played 13.
They've both been brilliant.
Yeah. Owen
Farrell 10, obviously.
Obviously, okay.
Well, he's World Cup's top scorer.
Goes without saying. Walks in.
If Farrell, so South Africa had four pot shots at drop goals, all arguably easier than the one that Farrell slotted.
George
last
Ford
week.
Is your drop goal boy.
Oh, that one that Farrell got last week was
in a World Cup semi-final. Was...
George Ford would have done better. I mean, George Ford is the same team. Yeah. it was a semi, wasn't it? Hang on. Yeah, it was against the same team. No, it wasn't.
It was South. Farrell's was against South Africa.
Farrell's was against South Africa.
Yeah,
against 48 metres.
So, just on Farrell, I mean, obviously the winning margin against Argentina this week was less than when George Ford played for them. Does that mean England are worse with Farrell than George Ford?
Argentina was significantly better.
Because Farrell let them be back.
And England played with 15 men, we know this. Although, actually, I think actually what happened, and just very briefly to jump to England, we'll go back to this in a bit.
Okay.
But I think England played really well with 14 men, just like New Zealand did in this Rugby World Cup final. And I think Henry Arundel just sacrificed himself for the team.
It's not often that you can say a player is legitimately bad, is there? Like, these pro players are so good, you make mistakes, sure. Henry Arundel was legitimately bad.
Well, he just didn't do anything.
Didn't do anything.
And which is bad.
And he didn't even go looking for work.
Yeah.
Come on, son. Get off your touchline.
He needs to go to France pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Under Lancaster's gaze.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Other players in a world. Yeah, Mbanambi was the standout.
And Mal Herb.
That's
great.
Yeah, that's a good one.
De Groot and Lomax were very good in this.
They really came of age.
I do want to talk about that, actually, because I think South Africa are so smart in this regard. I've mentioned this before, that they don't attack the scrums. They show a good, nice picture to the referee early on. They keep all the scrums solid, and then when they need to... That is the only time they attack.
Yeah.
To the point where in this game, because New Zealand were ahead and attacking the scrum they're likely to get the penalty, but it does risk a penalty against them. They never attacked. They never attacked the scrum.
Because South Africa were ahead. Yeah.
So they just show the nice picture, keep it stable for both teams, and
the stability of some of the scrums was wonderful.
Yeah.
That is a perfect textbook picture.
That's such a good point, Phil.
If New Zealand at any point of that game were up in the same way that England were up by 9 points,
make
with
it a lottery
minutes,
and make the referee make a decision.
Try and be dominant. They are more like, it probably becomes a 70-30 for the first one, and then once you've won the first one, it's an 80-20, and then it's a 90-10.
That's so interesting.
So it's their game theory on those scrums was very, very astute.
Yeah, South Africa make you want to play rugby again. That's kind of how I think about it. Because I think rugby is incredibly stale in so many areas. What do we see? A pod of three out the back, pod of three out the back. The kicking game has drastically improved this World Cup. Like, if you still think kicking's boring... go watch a different sport.
There are a lot of people saying this World Cup was boring. What else could you want but a game in the balance?
It's not boring.
And that last 6 minutes was just like heart in your mouth.
Yeah, 7 out of 8 of the knockout games were the last 5 minutes.
It's a great World
Cup. Amazing.
Many of them, the last second, the 82nd minute was when they were decided. I made this point last week that like people are saying that yes, the draw is ludicrous, and the draw does look bad on paper, but in reality, like, to say the draw is bad, you have to ignore all of the reality of the knockout games, and some of the matchups in the pool stages have been absolutely dynamite.
Yeah, the pool stages were a tiny bit disappointing, but no more so than any other World Cup.
Pool B and Pool C were great.
You always get the...
Yeah.
Ireland, South Africa. We wouldn't have had that game.
Yeah,
France-New Zealand
France
opening night.
Down of New Zealand.
Yeah, but a lot of... You know, you
Wales, Fiji, Australia, Fiji.
Yeah, we had whole weekends, though, where nothing happened. Like, I think
there was one bad weekend.
There was
one weekend.
Yeah. There was one other weekend I thought, oh, God. It's
but
you always get
what you're describing, I mean, the pool stage is going to be shortened by a week next time, which is an improvement in that sense. However, there's a good argument to say there will be no dynamite pool game weekends because all of the fixtures will
be they'll have a dominant team.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
If it was the top four teams were all in different pools... And so you've got Scotland in one pool and then England in another. So you've got kind of two good games in the pool stages.
Yeah, you need two good games in the pool stages to make the weekends interesting.
No, yeah, as in...
Yeah, two like, good games every two, weekend.
Yeah.
There may be two over
two good
the,
games
over the 20
over five weekends yeah. if you had it in a different scenario. If you had the top four teams split up, You risk having two good games across however many there are.
Yeah. So
harsh as it is for Ireland, Scotland, France, they may feel. I just think you've got to suck that up because it's meant the World Cup has been incredible. And if you were good enough to have won the World Cup, you would have won those big games.
Just to add to that, good enough to win the World Cup from that side of the pool too.
Yeah.
Which is the more important thing. So
because you've got to win the best.
We've said it from all along. You've got to beat everybody.
If your complaint is that you didn't make a semi-final, then that's not the mindset of a team that's going to win a World Cup.
Yep, 100%. You know, you want to win it, and if you didn't win it, well, you know, you weren't good. Yeah, just saying, oh, we didn't get to a semi-final, that's terrible. Well, sorry. Unlucky for you.
And England got that bronze medal. Third best team in the world.
I mean, yeah. The atmosphere the last two weekends in Paris would have been significantly better had France and or Ireland been involved. I get that. However,
yeah. There would have been less booing.
It's not reasons given.
There would have been less booing. I was a bit annoyed about that the last two weekends in Paris. Going like, how uncouth are these French rugby fans?
Get
like,
them.
they're booing Farrell last week ridiculously, and then this week, and then this week, and then
I mean
this
that
week,
is an outrage.
Oh my
so booing Farrell,
goodness me,
it's no, disgusting.
But this weekend before the game, booing Wayne Barnes before the match.
Oh, go for it!
And when he went up to get his medal, but it was French fans. It wasn't Kiwis. It was not New Zealanders. Just like last week, it was not Argentinians.
I bet the Kiwis are egging them on.
It was French
though.
Fans. However, I'm prepared to accept that this is just actually a part of the cultural difference
that we
have to actually embrace.
Hey,
and it's almost a mark of respect if you get booed in France.
Yeah. The reason that it'd be good, the atmosphere would be good if France and Ireland got through to the latter stages of the competition, the very late stages, is because they were good enough to do so and their fans would be excited. But they weren't, were they? And therefore, it's not going to be as good. So, unfortunate boys, be better.
I mean, part of the French culture, when a CEO, when a company fails and there's layoffs...
Rip off their clothes?
Yeah, literally rip the shirt off their backs.
Have you ever seen that?
No.
Yeah, so the union members will sort of... I remember it with Air France. Air France made some layoffs and they've got this executive scrambling over a fence. Now, anyone who knows me or listens to me will probably guess what my political leanings are, but I'm all for ripping clothes off their executives. down for that.
There's a picture of one of the
executives
trying to climb over a fence.
The balance sheet!
So do you know what? It would be boring if everyone was the same. Like, the fans of the different style of the fans has been great. The South American fans have been absolutely dynamite. So yeah, I'm prepared to accept the booing. In fact, enjoy it even.
Yeah.
And it did add...
I don't particularly like it, but I accept it's a French thing, therefore.
On the Farrell one last week, it annoyed me before the game, but every time he stepped up and slotted points and the boos got quieter and quieter through the game, it just made me love it all the more.
Oh, well.
Anyway.
So,
Anything else you wanted to say on the final? You had a couple of things in your head.
Yeah, I was just going through. You know, I think we've got most of the standout candidates for a World Cup team. I don't.
Etzebeth probably will win World Player of the Year.
Or Peter
tomorrow.
Yeah.
Maybe. Is he a nominee? Because we've got the four nominees.
Oh, he wasn't, was he?
It's Ardie Savia, who it could
be. Yes.
It's
Antoine Dupont.
It's Eben Etzebeth, and I can't remember the fourth one.
Was it Bundy?
Yeah, Bundy. It could be Bundy. I think it'll be Etzebeth.
Would you give Dupont the scrum half position?
No. He played two games. Two and a half games.
Aaron Smith's been awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aside from him, there hasn't really been a standout nine.
No.
Agree with that.
Standout wingers? Any wingers?
Pano was brilliant in the pool stages, but then got outshone by Colby.
Yep. Who hasn't been excellent?
Will Jordan scored eight tries.
Will Jordan. He's, as I mentioned, definitely.
I could give Will... Actually, Talia. I think
Talia
is... Hang on, he does stay up too late.
Well... He is the hardest man to tackle. He must be staying up, covering himself in baby oil.
Yeah, pretty much.
He is so slippery.
So elusive, isn't he?
He's amazing.
Evading the All Blacks' bloody hall monitors.
I think last week was 14 defenders beaten. This week was 9 defenders beaten.
That defenders beaten stat's an amazing one. I saw a thing in the week about all the players that had got 8 tries in World Cups. And Lomu has got had in his... In the World Cups in which he scored 8 tries, he beat something like 5 times as many defenders as Will Jordan has beaten in this World Cup.
What?
In the World Cup when he got 8 tries, whichever one that was, 95?
95. Yeah.
I wonder,
he beat something like 39 defenders in the tournament. several of them being Englishmen strewn across the pitch.
Yeah.
It is fascinating, isn't it, when you watch old rugby. So when we watch the France versus New Zealand game
in 99.
My mind, the best game of all time. They were utterly
Some of it was rubbish.
I could have coached that team. I could legitimately have coached that team and done a better job.
We watched one of the, was it 91 final, I want to say, and England's strike move tactic inside the opposition 22 was a bomb.
Yeah.
Like, bomb on the try line.
But weirdly, that seems to be coming back in fashion.
Occasionally, it does.
So let's just say congratulations to South Africa.
Yeah.
And we haven't even said any of that. If you're still listening right now, contactheadchasers@gmail.com is where you can find us, by the way, with any emails, and we'll have to get stuck into some of those. Mm. We get some brilliant emails, don't we?
If you want to email about financial services, Bidmore & Co.
Independent Financial Advisors.
There you go.
There was an enormous number of emails during the...
I will get back on my admin duties with the emails and get across those. Apologies. We do read them. We do see them. Well, I haven't been reading them because I've been really, really...
Busy. Really busy.
Quickly touch on third, fourth place playoff.
It's the game that shouldn't happen, isn't it?
Both these teams acted like they really, really cared. And they selected teams like they did. And
they played like they did.
The Argentinian players were in tears at the final whistle.
Yeah, and good for them. And I'm happy they wanted to play this game. The real game probably should be in Australia-Scotland.
Now, I was thinking about that. And do you... So, we've always spoke about the loser bowl or whatever you want to call it. So, the top 8 teams go through to the real deal, and then the next 8 teams go through to the alternative quarters.
Yeah.
And we would just run that, like, in traditionally when we spoke about it, we would just run it exactly as a mirror of the regular World Cup final route. I was thinking about this. Do you do it one of two alternative ways? Do you either strike through any tier one teams, and I know World Rugby don't recognise Tier 1, but the two big Six Nations of Rugby Championship Tier 1, strike through those.
Okay.
They get to go home, and then you have a legit competition to see who is the best of the Tier 2s.
Yep.
As one alternative. Or do you say you really make it a loser bowl, and you win? If you win, you go out. You have to play another week.
That's amazing.
I'm very much in favour of the loser bowl style for like a premiership style competition, because they're all elite and they're all getting paid the same. But when you're asking doctors and dentists and students to play in the loser bowl...
No, here's what you do. Every rugby player at least has the option, or maybe has to, stay in France for the entire tournament.
Okay.
And you have an Olympic village where everyone, I mean, you'd have to invite,
isn't
you'd have to invite lots of guests. But like the Olympic village, that you talk to when you talk to Olympians,
yeah,
the ones that love it are ones that have their event at the very start of the Olympics. And then
they've got 2 weeks
of
partying.
2 weeks of having to go and get penicillin shots.
I hate to bring this up, Tim. I do hate to bring this up. But do you think you might not get the same effect with an all-male...
Yes, which is why I just said you'd have to expand the guest list somewhat, but you somehow create an environment...
Run it concurrently with beach volleyball or something.
Yeah, or whatever. You create an environment where you'd be desperate.
Do you want to
you'd
continue
be desperate
this?
To not have to play professional sport.
I
you
don't
just want to
know
get
how you
on
create
it.
This environment, Tim. I think this is beyond the scope of the podcast.
I don't know.
I actually like just running it in exactly the same format as the actual World Cup. I could see people getting
like,
really...
To be clear, like you're acting like we're having a serious conversation. Tim's put forward his idea. Now let me counter it with mine.
because I think you write some great stories. And I think, look at Portugal and what they said about the World Cup.
Yeah.
How it was it's the biggest event in Portuguese rugby. Bonan. And then to watch them go into the knockout stage, and if they get another win there, some of these... teams will write some real history.
Yeah.
Mm. I do get in previous tournaments it wouldn't have been possible because the teams just weren't good enough, but now they are and we want to see more of them, so I would definitely run it.
Yes, and I definitely would. I would have that, so the finals weekend I would have just still two games, but I'd do away with the third place playoff and just have the...
Yeah, no one wants the third place playoff.
Scotland v Australia.
Yeah, I mean, that's most likely, but you don't know.
You'd
it could
never
be Japan.
Know.
Could be, I mean, presumably, it wouldn't be Fiji because they were out.
Samoa v. Portugal.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, Samoa or Tonga. Yeah. There's loads of teams that can do some damage.
Italy.
Yeah, Italy might have found their feet.
Although
the Redemption Bowl.
Yeah, Italy, I had high hopes for them. Not to be either France or New Zealand, but... To be within
90 points of New Zealand.
That... I would have backed them to do that pre-tournament.
Naivety.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right, well, there we go. That's rapid.
So just on England. So how would you assess England's World Cup and the team England, not the RFU England? How would you assess the England team?
I think this England team, their journey began in the semi-final. That's what I think. I don't think we saw anything like a Steve Borthwick team until then. And the future looks fairly bright under Steve Borthwick, I would say. From a pure coaching rugby systems point of view, whether he'll have the support or the players or even the political will to support him through it, I don't know, but he looks like he might be the right guy.
It is funny because we've all been a fan of Steve Borthwick the whole time.
Yes.
Like, we've all said he's a good appointment, but he needs time. Some people, particularly after the loss to Fiji, say, or the dire performances against Wales and Ireland in the warm-ups, were calling for his head then, which is just ludicrous. I think he has definitely earned the next World Cup cycle. I'm quite excited to see how he does. Go on.
Yeah, no, I'm just going to say, I'm going to stop you because you used the word World Cup cycle. I think that the last two World Cups is proof that this World Cup cycle talk is bollocks.
I'm not sure it is.
Well, South Africa won the last one after however many months with Rassie Erasmus. And then England have shown that 5 months of good coaching and a bit of cohesion and a bit of a solid, well-coached plan, however pragmatic and simple it is, can get you within a point of a World Cup final.
Yeah, and an easy route to the final.
Yeah, but to get within a point of the world champions.
Yes, yeah, you can do. But like, look at... So, my counter to that would be, look at Ireland and France. And Ireland 6 months ago were the best team in the world.
Yep.
And France 18 months ago were the best team in the world. And so they've kind of misjudged their cycle, because it is winning...
Only one team can win it.
I know, but those two didn't even make a semi. And they had a harder route.
Yeah.
But you've got to win those games. Like,
I feel a bit harsh with that because those games were so on a knife edge. Like, it was like Ronan Kelleher, Geordie Barrett doesn't get his legs under Ronan Kelleher and Ireland win.
Yeah.
And so so I think there's an argument that Ireland and France did everything right, and it's just if they were at 99% and in the case of New Zealand, they managed to go 1% above where they've been before, that can be enough just to skew that margin. So this is World Cup. This is why it's quite interesting to assess.
Yeah.
How you look at England, and you're right that I think so you were going to finish your point about England. Sorry, Phil. Before I jumped in on the whole World Cup.
Oh no! And you are right. Like the margins between those, but you would look back objectively over France's last 18 months or Ireland's last 6 months, and would they trade the Grand Slam for a better chance at the World Cup? Absolutely.
Judging by the parting, they were quite happy with what they achieved.
Well, absolutely, I actually think if you asked Ireland fans now, would you take away the series win in New Zealand? Would you take away the Grand Slam, Six Nations titles to get to a World Cup semi-final? I think they say absolutely not.
Yeah, said a semi, yes.
I think the next... Oh, yeah, for a World Cup... I think Ireland fans will be content. I think it will be a very different conversation in 4 years' time if the same thing happens.
Yes, which would be objectively hilarious if Ireland go out in the quarters again. But we will save that for 4 years' time. But no, the other point I was going to make about England was, and this is where my concern comes in, I think we all recognise that the Premiership is not of the same quality as it was even two or three years ago, and certainly not when Saracens and Exeter won, whatever it was, four out of six Heineken Cups. And that's where I'm concerned. So these players, so you will get more players being exposed to rugby because you're not bringing in as many foreigners into the league. So that's a good thing. But the overall standard of rugby and the opportunity for them to be playing those big European knockout games and guys getting experience of those big European knockout games is going to be lower. And that forges, like steel sharpens steel, that forges some of the experience that has led this England team to be able to turn it on when it counted.
And before you go into a conversation on that, we could talk about that in the Prem Pod.
Exactly what I was going to say.
Good. Brilliant. Yeah. So I am content with England's performance. Maybe I'm being greedy because I was really proud of them in the semi-final and gutted. But I think we need to see more because I think... Not because that's how you win World Cups. I'm actually, because only one team can win a World Cup, and there's some incredible rugby teams around there. So I'm more philosophical in this one and more thinking it's not about winning a World Cup. I don't give a shit about England winning a World Cup. Excuse my language. I don't care about England winning a World Cup. Let's try and win the Six Nations. And also, if that has to be quite pragmatic in the very short term, fine, but we need to see a little bit of development.
Right. Well, let's end this podcast, but let's end it with a question. You can answer it in the next podcast. Which union is more stupid than Bill Sweeney and his friends?
let the boys end.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.